15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, what I would call today the Common Sense Broadcast Network, often referred to as a very important statement by our very own Mark Andel. As always, as we begin our program, I'm going to ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends, because you know we cover the entire tri-state area, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And I'm very pleased to hear from our listeners who offer suggestions, many of which I use in my weekly commentary, which are broadcast on around 20 radio stations across America. And I thank all of those radio broadcasters for using that commentary during their public service time. And also, if you received our email today, email it to someone that you know. Get another person involved, because we're really starting to rock and roll. After 19 years of pushing this button, I think we've made some real, real progress. And that's, of course, because of the leadership in Washington. President Trump is very bold. Many of the elected leaders are starting to see that we better start paying attention to America and American-made and small businesses. It's a whole new world beginning the last few years. And of course, with our help, it's been going on for 19 years. I want to say thank you to the many people that I meet in my travels, and also offer compliments to the people on our panel who are very generous to us. They do this free of charge because they are true American patriots. And those people include Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, marking its 8th anniversary year. Also, Larkin Connolly, a national small business advocate, has really let his opinion out over the years on this broadcast. Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, always doing a great job to make sure this broadcast is up and running, and also our rebroadcasts are out there. Our pre-broadcast notice goes out thanks to Henry's knowledge and, of course, his endless participation with our efforts. I'm Michael Blihash, always proud to be with you, and I do have greetings from Curtis Ellis, who is out promoting the America First Project. We'll be talking with him in a few weeks, and thanks also to Curtis for all that he is doing to make that message get across to the people. We've had some very great events lately, and those events are starting to generate more and more people interested in America. All American workers and their families certainly represent a great force in this great country, the United States. And in America, the voters have more power than they realize. And I know that today, as we get closer and closer to the election, we should talk about some of these issues because, as you know, we made it a very big campaign through our daily radio broadcasts here on 860 to get the people to register to vote. We had that great site on the bottom of our internet site that brought you to a link that took you to all states across the USA where you can register. It gave you the requirements as to what's the final date. You can check that out anytime. And of course, on Tuesday, November the 6th, we'll see exactly what the voters want in this great country of America. But most important is that now that so many voters have registered, it's important that they get out and vote. And another thing I mentioned some time ago is that we have many people who are not eligible to vote living in America. So when you say there are so many people living in the country, adults, you have to consider that many of them are not citizens. Maybe they're waiting for citizenship. They are possibly illegals. So we have to take all that into consideration. Those that passed, those that have now registered on there, when you get only 50% of the actual people able and ready to vote, go out and vote, that's not good for America. That really is something that has to be corrected in the next, this cycle. Hopefully, those that are registered would go out. First, I'd like to turn the microphone to the, our very popular Larkin Conley, business advocate, and of course, he's been a SCORE mentor for many years. And Larkin, you always give good opinions. You're loved by the people. And of course, not only do the people see you and see all of us on the internet when they go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com, but I must have given 10 or 11,000 flyers out to people in, at all the events and parades and you name it. So people know those faces, and they, I do that because they sort of get to know you and me and Rich and Mark, that it's just not a name, it's also a face. Larkin Conley, how are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been told that I have a face that would scare a dog off a meat wagon. But that, all that being said, I appreciate that, Mike, Michael, and good morning to you and to Mark. I know Rich is off seeing the doctor, and Henry. You know, I'm going to start out with a question. And you know, I know we need to talk about Made in America, and I know that's what drives Mark, and this, and that's what drives this program. But I can't help but talk about what's going on in our country, and it just kind of throws me into a tizzy. And most importantly, I don't have the answers. I don't know what the answer is. But I was wondering if I could pose a question to you, Michael, and to Mark. If you were President Donald Trump's close advisor, what would you tell him to do about the caravan of hundreds of thousands of people that's headed for the Texas border?
Well, I can start off with that one. What would America do if a caravan of 7, 10, or 20,000 people were marching from Mexico to Canada? That's what would we do? And that's exactly what the Mexican government should be doing. I don't think we should be responsible for any caravan coming to America. And whatever force is necessary to stop the caravan should be taken, because I consider them total invaders. Total invaders. They're not coming, you know, at our invitation. Did you invite them, Larkin? Did you invite them, Mark? How about Henry? Did you send them an invitation? Did President Trump send them an invitation? Or any members of the House and Senate who are paid to represent us? Any group pushing their way into anything is considered by me as an invader. Mark, what do you think of my response?
Yeah, Larkin, great question. I watch it on you know, the news, and you catch it, and you see all these people marching and organized, and you wonder what had started it exactly, and what their total mission is truly about. But when they come to the border, it's almost like a football stadium. You couldn't let it anywhere. Could you let that happen? Your home to whatever, you know, they're going to have to hang out in their own country until the process is held, and the security, they can't just come through the doors without you know, following the procedure. So I don't, you know, it's something we're watching happening. It's a tough question, Larkin. You know, but you can't just let them come through them doors willingly and free.
So that kind of counters several Democrats who I've heard, and I apologize to the young lady who was running for Congress in Queens. Her last name escapes me. But she, among others, is calling for a borderless country. Hmm. How does that work?
Yeah, this is just a little example.
Larkin, yeah. That's like having no door on your house. When somebody comes to your door, you either say, come in because you're invited, or no thanks, I'm busy right now. but this is not the way this has been doing. And I want to know, is there really someone encouraging thousands and thousands of people to all of a sudden unite and journey to America when people all over the world knows that America's supposed to be a country of laws, rules and regulations? Larkin, your family came. But Mark, your family came over the years. My family, Henry's family, all of them came to America through legal channels. When they start saying to me about the Statue of Liberty and all, yes, but majority of those people were invited to America to be part of the Industrial Revolution. They went through a system there at Ellis Island, here in South Philadelphia, at the Port of Entry in Boston, or in Baltimore. They were welcomed. They were processed. They were already assigned to so-and-so family, to the Larkin-Conley family, to the Blehash family, to the Andel family. They knew where they were going, and they were just not going to be thrown on the streets. These people coming in here through the border, where do they go? Who is paying for them? Who is helping them? In fact, during the caravan, who is helping them with water, even to bathroom facilities, whatever is needed? I mean, let's get real. Somebody is behind all of these caravans. I know that people want to come to America, but they should understand they should come legally. They should apply legally in their country and come to America's border as a welcomed guest.
Well, and you know, the insult to injury is that I was listening to a debate the other day, a Republican-Democrat debate, and the Republican justified, and I kind of agreed with him, the president's action to practically eliminate all of the aid money, all of the money that this country sends to those three nations, Guatemala and the other two. I mean, it's $500 million a year. We said, we still have kids dying of starvation in West Virginia. We still have 28% of the children under 10 years old going to bed hungry every night. But we're sending $500 million to Guatemala and the nations south of that. And all of a sudden, the president goes, why, this is nuts. So he cuts the aid down to about $195 million. And the Democrats claim that that's why this whole thing happened.
Yeah,
because
you know,
we stopped giving
Larkin,
free money.
I heard, you know, how many homeless veterans, you know, if it's 40 to 100,000, whatever, but there's so many people in our country we need to take care of, too. And if you put the shoe on the other foot, you know, nobody's marching to our border to leave our country. You know, why are they leaving? That government needs to take a good look at this, you know, in Mexico and whatnot. Why do the people want to leave and try to, maybe there's a way there to try to slow this down. And you don't want everybody leaving every country and definitely dumping into here. Think of the small right. towns around them borders and everything. They've got to be nervous.
Very much so.
I fought the inclination to blame this on Democrats because they just want the votes. But listen, there's just no other way to slice this pie. There's no other way to slice this pie. This whole problem exists because Democrats want votes. They know that every person that comes across that line, the next thing Democrats are going to be saying is they should go through a 6-month waiting period and then be given the right to vote. I know it's coming. They absolutely refuse to come up with an answer other than we should be a borderless country, which to me is almost laughable.
Yeah, let's just have our houses with
wide
no
open.
Doors and just walk in and, you know, run to the refrigerator, turn on the TV, lay on the couch, do whatever you want.
Larkin, schools or anything, we should just leave wide open.
And you know what? This is another thing. Who is paying for the education? Now, Larkin, you brought up a very good point, and I'd like to address that a little bit. For years and years, we've been giving foreign aid to countries, mainly to help them to raise crops, to feed their people, to improve their water system. And once all that was done, to help them with health care, better medicine, that was what the foreign aid program was all about. Now, it's just annual foreign aid. When you apply for a grant or a contract, you have to give reasons why you need and are going to get this foreign aid. We don't do that. It's just an annual appropriation included in the budget. I think that that should be in the budget, and we can keep those foreign aid as long as the proposal is correct. But it should also be in the budget that says, for this foreign aid, you will help keep your people within your country's borders. You agree with that, Larkin?
Well, I mean, that's sure. I mean, that's nice. I don't know that there's any way in hell that we'll ever be able to give foreign aid to a country where a pile of it doesn't end up in the leadership's pockets.
But there's very little documented right now. If you ask, where is that $500 million going in Guatemala? I don't know if anybody could give you an answer.
Yeah, maybe, Mike, if it went to schools or a program or something.
That was originally the way for foreign aid, why the foreign aid was given, mainly to help people.
Education.
To education, water, clean water, clothing, how to, you know, improve their crops so that the people had a good harvest. That was the reason for foreign aid. We've gone so far away from that. That's not even discussed anymore because the people are already having clean water. The people are already having crop, you know, banner crops and things like that. Their health care is so-so, but at least it's now improved. The problem is the people don't have jobs. So that's the new thing that has to be done all over the world. And get people jobs, get those people an income so they can buy the products made in their country and also maybe trade with other countries around them, trade with the United States. But it's all been money out of our pocket all over the world, and we haven't really got a good report on where the money went.
Yeah. I'd like to switch gears here, if we could. Last week, Thursday, I was a speaker for NYSERDA. Larkin, you might have heard of it, but it's a New York State Retired Teachers Association. I'm sure every state has one. But 17,000 retired teachers belong to this program. We had probably 200 or 300 people down in Verona, New York. But it was neat because age is probably 60 to, 80 retired teachers, principals, and Larkin, especially after I did this speech, and Mike, a lot of great questions, but most of these educators do not like the Common Core, do not like they can't teach. Kindergarten, I found out, if you can't read real well, then you're already in a pullout, they call them, a pullout. So right away your child's going to a pullout 5 days a week. The pressure on the kids and the teachers can't teach, but I really learned some great stuff. There was China tours they talked about. They talked about the problems. They said a lot of these people in positions at the schools, the superintendents, right, are younger, and they never, the one teacher said they've never learned how to educate. They've went to college, they've done their stuff, but they have no experience in actually educating. And it was very interesting, guys, to talk about what we talk about every week and to find the breakdown. But basically, the teachers can't teach no more, and they've got to follow this system, and it really drives them crazy, you can tell. And they were tough. Tough teachers, but we talked about the skilled trade shortage and things, and kind of in the 70s how this happened. It was a big manufacturing area. Everybody pushed skilled trades. 80s, we wanted to become this world, this country of big business, which we did, but they pushed and sold going to college, get a big house, have your lawn cut, get a big membership at a gym type thing, instead of building something, learning how to fix something, and realize the reward of doing that. And that was the big disconnect we found right there, guys.
Mark, that was a real great statement. Larkin?
Well, the fact of the matter is I would love to have asked, had I been in Mark's position, and I know they had, what he says literally proves my point. But nobody in the political arena wants to answer the question, what is the correlation between the day that Jimmy Carter started the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., and the day this country started on a slide from being in the top five in the STEM fields all the way down to, if it weren't for I forget which one that might be. Math. No, it's not. Certainly not math. Science. I think we're like 36. Everything else is in the 40s. What's the correlation between the development of the Department of Education, which was supposed to shore up all the education in this country? Why it needed shored up when you're in the top five, I'll never know. But that's when it all headed south. That's why I think the Department of Education, I don't even want to move that one out into the sticks, out into Buffalo and Cleveland and Pittsburgh. I want to close that down.
Right.
I want to take education back to the school board, and I want parents of the kids being educated to be responsible, attend school board meetings, vote their hearts and their conscience, and support the system.
You know, Larkin, you would have loved, you know, some of these people and teachers I spoke to, and they were tough. It was back when they could do things. The one lady said, when I walked through Buffalo to get to school, that was my education. You know, and you would have loved her. And then she said, now a bus has to pick that kid up in front of your house. Not the neighbor's kid can't even walk over. There was a student that lived across from school. He can't walk to the school. He's got to wait for the bus or miss school. It's just such a different era. And they're so frustrated. But, again, they went to parents, parents, and parents. Have to change the stigma putting on becoming a welder and machinist and no metal shop and wood shop and you don't have to fix this. Call somebody. You would have loved it, guys. This wasn't one teacher. This was the whole room talking what we talk. And they kind of cannot believe how we got to today.
Mark, did they offer any solution as to what they would do right now to change this system, to restore the industrial arts and trades in the schools?
It has to happen. You know, it's such a culture change, though. They were talking the 70s, the 80s, and how everybody switched and how they sell college. And, you know, they don't down college, but they said they've got to work for it, but this debt that they're accumulating. But it's all because the system, this whole process is selling it. And they've got to get the parents to get on board. And, you know, like Larkin and you say, you got to get out and vote, but we've got to make change. They said teachers, there was no positions. Years ago, they said there's no positions. And I always, you know, say, hey, you got to go to South Korea to become a teacher. Now they're going to be a shortage of teachers because they pushed that too far one way. But they're having trouble because of the positions of these higher superintendents and everything are younger, that they've never went through the true process of the 80s and 90s. They don't really know, and they picked on them. They said they really don't know what education is all about.
Well, we talked about a number of things over the years, and education was one of them. If you remember, we talked about getting the various teachers from every state in a particular stadium, a convention center, and let them say what they feel would be best to get their kids the best education for the right dollars. And education is well supported in the country. A lot of the money for education, in my thought processes, it's wasted on all sorts of pensions and, you know, days off and this and that, you name it. It's not there. It's just what is the teacher is mainly concerned about doing the job. But then there's the rules and regulations. And by the way, some teachers gave up years ago when the federal government put their foot into the door and started to tell them this is what you're supposed to do. Common Core, the whole deal. They gave up. They totally gave up.
Yeah, they hate that. You know, a couple of them said, I would stand there. Okay, the student was good. Billy was okay. He knows why he wasn't passing, because he missed too many days. So say he missed 7-10 days in a 50, 60-week course, you got a problem. The student would understand, but then they said the parent would say, but why is he failing? Well, he said he missed 7 or 10 days in a quarter. If he was at his job, he would have been fired. And you would have loved to talk, Larkin and Mike, you know, what's going on there. But most of the time it came back to parents, but then the system that won't let them teach at all. It drove them crazy. You know, these teachers, you can't teach no more. And pushing a kid too far one way, I didn't know in kindergarten they're got reading curriculums that they have to pass. And then you're in these pull-out classes. So right away you're teaching a kid, you don't give them a purpose. You know, you're already saying you're really an underdog, you know.
And, you know, you're right, Mark. You know, as soon as I hear this kind of stuff, and, you know, through our agency, I work with people looking for jobs and things like that. And many of the employers that call, they are looking desperately for people with some knowledge, with hands-on experience.
And soft skills, Mike, that can show up.
Right, and skills is the main thing. And the ability to keep a schedule. This is a problem. I had a gentleman call me just yesterday and said, send me someone fresh. I want to send them, give them the full treatment. I want to train them from scratch. This guy is about 40 years old. He said they'll have a job for many, many years with me. But I don't want to be interviewing 50 people to find out they have more baggage than I would ever imagine. If you can send me someone, I'd be very appreciative. I had a roofer call me. I had a tin maker, the guy who does the siding on the houses. It's just one after the other. There are so few hands-on people available that this is a par problem of the educational system.
Now, a lot of times I'll tell in my bus story or my story there, you know, my parents grew up poor. We fixed everything. My father never took it in. If the dishwasher went bad, we went to the local dumps in Alma here, and we found the solenoids, and we got about 40 solenoids. We fixed that, and my father taught me how. Now, a teacher said, hey, from a computer, you never get that rewarding experience. You never get the fulfillment of fixing something, building something, and that feeling from a computer. He said, I don't care what they tell anybody. From playing with a computer, you don't get that feeling of making something work, fixing something, and getting that feeling. And he said, that's what's lost. Nobody ever gets that because the metal shops, wood shops, you don't get that feeling of, you know, it's kind of cool to realize you actually made that work again.
You know, Alex Martinez, when he was on the broadcast, he said that they have the virtual classroom, but then after you see it all done on the computer, you then move to the next step and you take it apart and do it yourself. That's what's missing in our schools.
Nobody gets that, you know, it's rewarding.
So I'd like to relate a story that's adjunct. It's very much related to what we're talking about here. I got a brand new client about 6 weeks, 2 months ago. And Mark, someday I'm going to have to share some of this with you because he's building a new fishing boat.
Oh.
What a brilliant engineer. He is a maritime engineer. And he just saw where the 18 to 24-foot center consoles were. And he just said that they're not efficient, and it's just a rotational mold. It's just fantastic. But when the very first call I had with him, I said, we got to get to know each other. So who are you? Tell me who you are, brothers, sisters, mother, father, cousins. I want to know where you went to school. I want to know what you got your education in, where you grew up, who your friends are. And so just give me a narrative. And he talked about his education through college. And I said, excuse me just for a second, but you didn't tell me where you went to high school. And he said, grade school and high school. And he said, I didn't. I was homeschooled. Hmm. And I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, I was homeschooled. And I said, I don't know that I've ever had an extended conversation with anybody that's ever been homeschooled. You've got to explain this to me. What's the difference? How did you graduate from high school when he had to go in? He and his sister had to go in annually and take proficiency tests for their grade. And he said, the two of us always finished top of our class. And I said, is that because you're that smart? And he said, no, it doesn't have anything to do with brains. He said, my mother didn't know science. She might have known a little history. She didn't know a lot of math. What my mother did with us was she taught us how to learn. She didn't stand there over a textbook and read words and put stuff up on a board and then ask them to take a test. She taught us how to learn.
Wow.
And that's what kids don't get in grade school and in high school, because they're hell-bent on taking that slowest student and making the class move at that pace. He said, couldn't get history. It took me 2 years to get through 1 year of history. Because I'd read it and read it, and somehow it just didn't. He said, my sister was 4 years ahead of me in history because she loved it. I was great in math, but kind of terrible in science. So we learned at our own pace, and we knew that there was a reckoning moment when we had to be a certain distance down the road because we had to take a proficiency test. So this, to me, absolutely punctuates what the problems are in school right now. The government tells me how to get a package from one side of the city to the other side of the city. It takes 4 days, and when it gets there, it's torn. They tell me how they're going to manage my retirement and Social Security. Now they're telling me I may not even get that. And now they're telling people how to educate other people, and we have moved to the bottom of every list in the world. When are we going to learn?
Yeah, you know, one teacher also, Larkin, said, I came from Ohio to teach in New York, and here they talked about regions. And she said, I didn't even know. I wanted somebody to explain that to me, because all they pushed was regions. The goal was just to get more regions, and then a school got better ratings. And it was amazing what I heard. Like you just said, it's all driven for numbers, for to be the best school, more sometimes for the school itself to get more benefits or whatnot.
No question.
Well, I agree with Larkin that we should abolish the Federal Bureau of Education. In fact, I think that would be very nice to put that on the ballot, the election ballot, and let the people come out and vote. That way, no a political person can be blamed. It was this, it was that. And I think it should be put back to the states. The states should come up with this plan. Someone in West Virginia has a different life and a different need for job opportunities than someone in Pennsylvania, in Buffalo, New York, or in Florida. And those people should not be governed by some bureaucrat in Washington telling them this is what we teach, because you may be wasting time for boys and girls that need different opportunities from the places where they live.
And different things to learn. You know, it's just what he kept on saying to me that finally resonated was, my mother taught me how to learn. Yeah. My mother taught me what the process was. And she made us read, and she made us look up words, and she made us explain to what we read. And we just learned how to learn.
Yeah,
we didn't sit there and listen to a teacher like Charlie Brown says, wah, 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 wah. And that's all they hear. That's all they hear sitting in this classroom.
Very good, Larkin. You know, here, Larkin, you've heard of the BOCES program, you know, where, you know, you're going to high school, and if you want to choose 2 years of BOCES, if it's from cosmetology to, you know, auto mechanics to welding to, you know, but they talked about that. The problem, it was, you know, a few of them told me it was for the high-risk kids. The high-risk was, are they going to graduate, so it become that dumping zone, and it got that stigma. And he said that was a problem. Now, a lot of these kids would love it, and the parents would still say, but, yeah, I really want him to do this, but he's excelling here. I'm going to find him a job when he gets out. He's going to already have a job, and that's just hard to sell to the parents again.
Exactly. So I don't know. Who, I mean, Bruce argues with me all the time, and, you know, he claims that Alabama needs more help than New York. Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that, not for 5 seconds.
I can't find anybody to work, so I disagree.
Right.
You know, we talked about, I said, they come out of school, they don't even know how to hold a hammer or a screwdriver. And you don't have to be, that doesn't have to be your career, but it's good to know how to fix certain things. And, Mike, you've had that one lady on the show, and we've talked. You know, that's just great stuff. People actually enjoy it if they were exposed to it. And then there's not a lot of teachers. The one guy I talked to was 65. He said, everybody asks me, they want to hire me. You know, he's going around and just doing some talks, and there's just nobody out there that's trained enough to become that teacher and run the tech class. We want the metal shops and wood shops, they agree with me, back in high schools. Don't even bus them somewhere else.
How is it even possible that this could be going on in a country where we put so much of our money, our annual tax bill, into education? It doesn't make sense. You know, I was talking with someone a few weeks ago, and Larkin, this is a very interesting line. You'll love it. And they asked me, how much of the $21 trillion of America's debt is caused by the Federal Bureau of Education? Their rules and regs placed on the states. It's a very good question. How much of that debt that we're in for the $21 trillion now is on the books because we were pushing education that wasn't of any value within the states. And that hurt not only our people, it hurt workers, it hurt work skills. So Jimmy Carter may have really done more harm to America and America's youth and America's middle-aged people than most people realize. What do you say to that, Larkin?
No, I don't disagree, not for one second. Anybody within 200 miles of Washington, D.C., thinks that there's anything, including building roads, cutting down trees, mailing mail, managing Social Security. Anybody that thinks the federal government can do a better job of anything except providing a common defense, they're crazy. They've lost their mind. And I don't know how many times the federal government has to prove that.
You know, I have to tell you this. This is very interesting. You mentioned about workers. There are delivery services, including the Postal Service, that is having problems finding people. Because people 20 years ago, you know, they were devoted to getting the mail to you, no matter what the weather, no matter hot, rain, cold, snow. Today, people don't want that. And some of these places that were doing those deliveries are finding their people going into inside jobs. Maybe they're in the shipping industry, they're in for Target or whoever, but they want to be inside. They don't want that hassle, you know, dragging the mail around and stuff like that. It's a whole different mentality. Now, a lot of these people have the skills of looking at the mail and knowing where it goes. So they're going to be great shipping and receiving people, but we can't find people for even basic mail delivery.
Yeah. You know, one teacher mentioned, like, automation replaces things the computer age. Yeah, it replaced things. But building a house, he said, nothing's replacing it, so you're going to need carpenters. You know, he said, so I don't – he can't realize the disconnect. I mean, you're going to have carpenters building a house. It's just something that's not being replaced. So,
well, you know, I think maybe this is after this midterm, and this has been a very ugly midterm. You turn on the radio and the television stations, and you see and hear these vicious ads about.
Oh, the ads!
Oh,
Mike,
it's unbelievable! It's disgusting. But I think after this is done, I would hope that it's time for the House and Senate and the President to sit down and talk about the future needs of businesses in America. We can have businesses expand in America. The economy's doing great. But we still have tens of millions of people living in poverty with no jobs. And those people are not on the records because they haven't been on the records. They haven't looked for a job in many years. I have people now coming to us for about jobs that haven't been in the job market for 8 and 9 years because they were taking care of their kids, driving their kids to school. It's a whole new different world, and now they want to get into something, and they have great skills as being a mom at home.
It reminds me of Larkin's great friend, he met, you know, Sherman McLeod, and we met, and what he's doing, showing people what they could possibly do, and the reward from, you know, rewarding yourself with a paycheck is, and that's, you know, in fact, we'll have to get him back on, Mike.
Sherman was really an eye-opener. And Sherman, by the way, is a person who should be widely supported by every foundation and every government entity. I mean, he does get some support, but it's really not enough. And some of the people, quite honestly, within the human service system don't like people like Sherman McLeod or myself because we are promoting self-sufficiency, skills. They want to keep their jobs and keep people in poverty. It's a fact. It's all over the country. If you were working in human services and your job was there providing, giving food stamps or getting people into welfare, you don't want Sherman McLeod or Michael Bliash or Mark Andel or Larkin Connolly talking about this kind of stuff because it diminishes their job.
You just hit something major there, Mike. Yes.
It's a terrible thing. Shame. And some of these people are really out to get the social workers who are promoting self-sufficiency. It's a pretty rough road out there. And they always tell me, Michael, I don't know how long this jobs thing is going to last. I think it's a bubble. And I said, I don't think it's a bubble. If everybody learns a skill, if we start supporting the American-made label, we are not going to have a crash.
Mike, in every bus that came in, we had 30-plus this October. We had unbelievable buses from around the country. It was just an unbelievable bus year, and these buses are fired up. We had Asians from Chicago that blew me away last weekend about how they love America and will only buy Made in America products because their work that they came to this country and they did in Chicago got shipped overseas. And I'll tell in my story that we have 500 privately owned businesses supply all the products to the Made in America store. I tell them Made in America equals no tariffs. But, you know, not one publicly traded company in the United States of America makes a Made in America product 100% that I can sell. There's a statement there. It all became about the dollar and about making money. And you're on the same trail, Mike, with what you just said.
Everything. You know, even the various groups, the foreigners that come to our cultural center in Philadelphia, and I speak to them and I love talking to the visitors, they tell me that a lot of the products that they see sold in America are 10 to 20 times more than they would be sold in China or Japan. 10 to 20 times more in America. And that's they said somebody's making a lot of money on our work.
Yeah, because they never share if a shirt's $3, a Bangladesh shirt, $2. It's sold for $25 to $50 here.
Right, right. And by the way, we talked a few weeks ago. What about Nike and all these other places? Why can't they get 50% of the products made in America? Why do we have, of their million people that they have all over the world making things, distributing things, why do we only have 19,000 people working in America and all those jobs are selling?
Because too many people are worried about their portfolio.
That's right. That's exactly right. So as we urge people to look at that label, it's really starting to have an effect. You know, in just a few days, we're going to already be marking the next edition of National Small Business Weekend, the first weekend of November. And also, we're going to be talking and urging people to support American Made Month. These are two ideas that came about as a result of this broadcast. And yet, the national people are saying, well, that sounds discriminating, American Made Month. National Small Business Weekend, well, that's not a bad idea. But, you know, if you're encouraging people to buy American Made, National Small Business Weekend, you go into many of the stores, it's a lot of foreign made stuff. I said, yes. But as time goes on and people talk to the store keepers and the managers and the people who are invested in these businesses, they'll see that the American people want to see more American made in those stores. That's the whole idea of our campaign.
Mike, our movement is alive and well. If you've seen what I've seen the last month, of people love, and it's common sense, like we say, making things in our country. Making things is cool, too. Making things is neat. Being self-sufficient is good. There's so many things that tie to it, but from all walks of life, you know, the Asians, it's incredible what I heard over the month, and I love it because it fires me up, and they're loving. They're even whispering to me. I didn't vote for the guy, but geez, I got to give him credit. You know, we're busy again, and how many help wanted signs, and how many jobs, and you know, you're hearing, okay, he's a good businessman, but maybe you can't do this or that. But I'm laughing. They've got to accept him for what's going on. I am busier than I've ever been. We just won a big military contract. It's beautiful.
Absolutely, nobody's going to argue with
talked
it.
About.
Larkin.
And,
yeah, it's you know, and the funny thing is that nobody wants to come to grips with the fact that nothing will put this ship called the United States of America on the right course faster than JOBS.
Larkin, absolutely. You just nailed it. You give me chills. And they will not. I'm hearing the whispering off the buses. They have to give it to him on that side. Now they're saying, okay, he's a good businessman, but he's not this. I'm laughing. They've accepted one thing. They're starting not to take that away from him, that he's got this country going in the right direction for our economy and jobs.
I mean, it's sad.
I've got to also add to the side here. What a wonderful, wonderful saying that was. It was so appropriate. Republicans stand for jobs, not mobs. And I was listening to this Democratic pundit, this liberal pundit on television going, oh, no, you're not going to start using the M word, are you? And they kind of disgraced the word mobs. And I said to myself, well, that's kind of ridiculous. That to me, that was at the Capitol during the Supreme Court hearings. That was a mob. So I looked it up in the dictionary, and it was the perfect description of a mob. I didn't say anything about killing anybody or shooting people or breaking into war. It talks about the actions of a group that disagree with the opinion of the other side, and that's what they do. They scream, they yell, they stand up, you know, they do all that stuff. And it's like jumping on the president because he said the other day, I'm a nationalist. Well, if you look up nationalist in the dictionary, he's a nationalist. Yeah. It's just that simple. He's a nationalist.
Larkin, if they took your beer away, you'd form a mob.
Yeah, oh, yeah, big time. Big time. You'd get a mob in no time. You'd get a mob in no time flat, and I wouldn't have any trouble getting people to be behind me on that either. But you know, if you look up nationalist in the dictionary, it doesn't say anything about white nationalists. It doesn't say anything about Nazi Germany. It says a nationalist.
Absolutely. I couldn't believe they tried to twist that.
Oh, of course they did. They tried to twist it and say that he was saying he's a white nationalist. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, guys.
You know, Larkin, as we talked about this issue with education, we're a nation of laws. We agree with that. I think there should be a law made that our students have to graduate with at least 2 job-ready skills. I mean, we talk about laws. You need a law for this and a law for that. We really should have a law that the people graduate and they're ready for something. Right now, it's a cat in a bag. They leave and they're wonderful. I had a young person I spoke to, and as he was waiting for me to sit down and talk to him. He was doing a crossword puzzle in a book. I don't do those things, so I really can't tell you much. But the entire time we were talking, he was focused on the crossword puzzle. And I said to him, how often do you do that? He says, there's not a crossword puzzle that I don't take the time to do. And I said, well, do you have a resume? No. But he has a crossword puzzle ability. So there's something wrong. There's something very desperately wrong. And by the way, if teachers are allowing a student to do the crossword puzzles in class, this is another problem I have. This, you know, cell phones should be left at the door. All the crossword puzzles or whatever else they'll be focused on should be left at the door. And the classroom should be a place to learn and grow. And then we would not have what Larkin is experiencing. And many of the people calling our agency, they can't find job-ready, qualified people. Criers and complainers, dime a dozen. But when it comes to job-ready, like, wow, you mean I got to be there every day at 9 o'clock? Wow. Yeah. Do you have any swing shift jobs? You know, all that. You have no idea the idioticness people have in their minds.
Yeah. And teachers brought that up, Mike, that, you know, that's what they're talking about, absenteeism in schools. Now, you've got to show up there. If you can't show up there and get it done, you're going to go out in the real world and you're going to be late. And we see that all the time. I just interviewed a guy yesterday. And he's disappointed with lazy people, the arrogance, the entitlement. You know, nobody wants to work overtime, Saturdays. It's a whole culture change nobody can really grab a hold of.
And you know, Larkin, we talked about the border. You brought up about the border. America is a nation of laws. If we don't obey those laws, why are we electing people and paying them to go to Washington to enforce any laws? They should say our borders are our borders. And by the way, also, how are we obligated as the American people, the American taxpayers, to take care of any person who illegally came to this country?
Well, we're not, but you can't get the bleeding heart liberals to say that. But if you want something that'll really annoy you, it was the other day I heard a discussion, again, between the liberal and the conservative, and they were arguing about what President Trump did to these families, separating the children, da-la-la-la, enforcing da-la-la, doing all this stuff. And it ends up that what what President Trump, ICE, and all of the people down there were doing was enforcing an existing law. They were enforcing an existing law. No questions asked. This is the law. This is what we have to do.
That's right. And in fact, I saw the report yesterday where it showed then Senator Obama giving his speech that we have to be a nation of laws. We cannot have people invading our borders. When he came, became president, he again said the same things.
Yes.
So what makes it different today than it was 10 and so many years ago?
The offensive part of it is that when I read all this, I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why didn't that happen towards in the Obama era? So I did a little bit of digging and found out that Obama disagreed with that law, so he chose not to enforce it, quote unquote, from his administration. We chose not to enforce it. Now, is the president above the law?
Now, here is where I would like to say that no president should be able to do that. That should be under agreement of not a presidential pardon or something like that. That's one thing. But when it comes to a law that affects all American people, their well-being, no president should have that ability to hold the people hostage. I think he should say, well, I feel this way, but the House and the Senate, the people we elect and pay to go to Washington, should also put their two cents in.
Well, it's a law. It obviously passed through the House. It passed through the Senate. It was signed by President Bush, and it was put into law. And Obama gets to his presidency and decides he's not going to enforce an existing law. I'm sorry. That's just wrong. I don't care who it is or what they did. For a president to stand up and say, I choose not to enforce a particular, that's why immigration is such a problem in this country. Obama did nothing about it.
Well, then, if that's the case, the press, number one, and also all the leaders in the House and Senate should have objected. Why didn't they? Both independents, Republicans, and Democrats, and the news media should say, why are you not enforcing this law? People coming to this country illegally are taking the jobs that should be and could be used by the American people. When the immigrants came between 1880 and 1914, they were invited to be part of the Industrial Revolution. They had a position. When they came, they already knew what they were going to be doing. They had people welcoming them. They had jobs to welcome them. Where are the jobs to help any of these caravan people right now? In other words, they're immediately going to have to go on to some level of welfare within the United States. And who pays for welfare?
Who covers that, Mike?
Who pays for welfare?
Yeah.
Larkin, who pays for welfare?
The tax coffers. It all comes out of the tax coffers. It's extremely unfortunate. The truth of the matter is that I agree with President Trump. I think that these people need to be interviewed. And if there's, I built a bookcase into my wall in my new house here, took out the window and put a bookcase around it. It is absolutely magnificent. It is an absolute work of art. And I had a Finnish carpenter from Brazil. I apologize, from Argentina. Jorge, and hardly spoke a word of English, but we could communicate handily. And he's applied. He's done all the things necessary to become a citizen. And he's on the up and up, carries a green card. Enough said. And what Trump wants to do is interview people. And if they've got skills and they're not going to be a burden, but an addition to our society, let them in.
Oh, yes. In fact, you know what? As you say that, Larkin, this is something that should have been done to this caravan of people before they stormed the wall there in Mexico, or the gate, whatever. They should have been interviewed. Why are you coming to America? Are you coming to America to add? Do you have job skills? Or are you just coming to be part of the welfare system? That's a very good point, and I think that should be done. People should be talking about this, because this is the future of America. If we want our people in America right now to have a job, to have a future, to get regain job skills, we have to protect what we have. Just like we have a door on the front of our house to protect what we have inside, we need a door, or at least the knowledge that people are coming that they're not going to be able to stay here just because they arrived.
I'd hand that welder at the line. I'd say, here's a bus ticket. Greyhound bus ticket. Take you straight to Buffalo. When you get off of the thing in Buffalo, you take a taxi cab to Elma, New York, and ask for Mark Anthony.
Yeah, we just got to add one thing. He's got to add a jacket.
Right direction, and guess what? You'll be welding your butt off inside a week.
I love it. You know, now that I can agree with.
If your house was wide open, Larkin, you knew 100 people, you don't know anything about them, they're coming in, are you going to start cooking for them or build a gate, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly right. I mean, this has got to be discussed more openly in the manner that we did today, within the press, within all these shows that are on TV, these talk shows, not just sit around and degrade one person after the next, but talk about common sense issues that will make us a better country, make our economy better so that no one says we're living in a bubble, so that this bubble never bursts, and that we're able to get our products made and distributed around the world. And at that point, we can also welcome products from around the world and be trading, you know, in a 50-50 balance, as we talk about so much.
Let me also answer the question I posed at the beginning of the program. The best answer I received, by the way, was from Bruce Bassett Powell, who I spoke with yesterday. And I straight out asked him the question. I said, what's your answer? And he said, I would immediately go to New York and get the UN involved.
I agree. I agree with that because
their problem, and we would start solving the problem around the world about people picking up and moving to a better economy. Just not right.
Yeah, I agree with Bruce. In this respect, I do, because they're there, and what are they doing to help not only resolve issues in their own countries, but here in America, we should all be discussing it as one big happy family, because that's what the world is supposed to be. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear, we are listening to Ricky Lee as we close off today's broadcast. Larkin Connolly and Mark Andel, thank you for a great broadcast today. I think we talked about a lot of good common sense issues. Well, ladies and gentlemen, till this Saturday at 11, or next Saturday at 11, or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Thank you again. Spread the word. You'll have a rebroadcast of today's program in 2 hours. Thanks.
All right. Have a great week, guys, and go buy Made in America products tonight.
Let's make it in America.
You'll find people who live their lives unashamed and ain't afraid to say God's name out loud.